Well, good morning. I am really excited to be here with you all, but like Adam said, I work with middle schoolers, so I'm used to an interactive crowd. So we're going to kick things off with a question, okay? Show of hands, anyone in here have an irrational fear? Just a few. No one's scared of spiders. Spiders up front. It could be the dark, heights. There's plenty of things that could be irrational fears. Actually, why don't you do me a favor? Lean over to someone around you or the person you came with and just tell them real quick your irrational fear. What's the thing that you're like, man, if I could avoid this for the rest of my life, I'd be happy about it. Okay. Feels good to just get it off your chest, right? And maybe you told someone, they said, oh, that's mine too. And that also feels really nice. My irrational fear, and this is very specific, I understand that. It's kind of weird, very niche. My irrational fear is deep, dark waters where I cannot see what's below the surface. So for example, you will never catch me swimming in Lake Lanier. Never. I could be on a boat though, happy about that, that's fine. I don't want to think about what's underneath the boat. I don't even want to think about the bottom of the boat. I do not want to know what's underneath the waters. And so because of this fear for a long time, I thought cruising was not for me. I was like, there's no way that I'd want to be on a massive cruise ship out in the middle of the ocean. Well, a few years ago, I went on my first cruise and man, they're awesome. I love cruising. Any cruisers in the room? Anyone wishing you were on a cruise right now for fall break? Yeah, same. I love it. I've been on a few since then. It was so fun. What's not to love about cruising? The people watching, top tier. Unlimited Diet Coke, the little chocolates on the pillow. You don't have to think about cooking at all because they're just like, here's more food all day long. Cruising is the best. And when I'm on the cruise ship, I don't even really think about this fear that I have because the ocean's just so beautiful and the sunsets are beautiful. And so this irrational fear I have kind of disappears. Well, a few weeks ago, I had talked one of my friends into going on a cruise with me. I was like, you would love it. So we went on a cruise together. She was having a blast. And when I go on a cruise, I'm not a big excursion person. I just like to stay on the ship because then everyone gets off the ship and it's so fun to have the whole boat to yourself. So, but there's one island that this specific cruise line goes to and they have the best snorkeling. It's so beautiful. And so I told my friend like, hey, when we get to this island, it was Castaway Key, if anyone's been there. If we get to this island, we got to get off the ship so we can do some snorkeling. They have this beautiful snorkeling lagoon. They have like statues at the bottom of the ocean, but the water's so clear and the fish are beautiful and it's not that deep. So it's just really relaxing. And so we get off the boat, we get our snorkeling gear on, which if you ever want to feel attractive, put on some flippers and a snorkeling mask. I mean, it's stunning. So I get into the ocean, we're swimming out to the lagoon, and we start the scavenger hunt. We find all the statues, it's so amazing, and we get to the very back of the lagoon. So now we have the whole swim back to shore. Now the way this island is set up is there's the snorkeling lagoon. And then, do you like how many times I'm saying the word lagoon? Because I'm hearing it. There's the snorkeling lagoon. Then there's the other lagoon that's like jet skis, banana boats, all the different boats you could take out for deep sea fishing, parasailing, all that stuff. And then the cruise ship. So we're in the snorkeling lagoon, very far away from the cruise ship. But as we're in the back, when we're done snorkeling and we start our swim back, I guess every boat they own decided to turn on at the same time in the other lagoon. Every jet ski, every banana boat, every deep sea fishing boat. And so a lot of waves started to form and there was a pretty strong current. And we're swimming back and I'm tired. And we're swimming and there's all these waves and this strong current and I'm starting to wonder, do I know how to swim? I mean, I made it through one day of high school swim team tryouts, but I don't even know anymore. And I keep swimming and I'm like, God, the snorkel's so ugly. But I keep going and the waves and the current and all the things. And all of a sudden I look up and I realize I have drifted to the rope that's between the snorkeling lagoon and the jet skis. And all I see is the cruise ship. And that irrational fear I had starts to feel a little more rational. And so I start to panic. Because I don't know if you've ever seen the size of the propellers underneath the cruise ship. And this cruise ship is docked. It's not going anywhere. But my thought is, well, it's over. to the propellers I go, and I'm thinking about what's underneath the water and all the rocks and all that. Now, there are so many lifeguards. There's the ropes. There's boundaries. There's no way I would have made it all the way over there, but all I'm thinking about is I'm much closer than I would like to be. And so I'm swimming, and I'm starting to panic, which is great for snorkeling. And so I'm just taking on water, you know, the whole thing. I finally get to the shore. I'm dragging my body out of the water. I'm laying there. There's a 7-year-old in the distance judging me so hard. Like, what is wrong with that lady? And I'm just laying there trying to catch my breath. And all I can think is, I was not expecting that. I was not expecting a run-in with my greatest fear, a fear that I have laughed about, a fear that I thought, I'll never have to actually interact with it. I was caught off guard. It wasn't fun. I was not expecting to experience that today on vacation, of all places, too. But rarely are we expecting to have an encounter with our biggest fears. I mean, if you're scared of jump scares and ghosts and things like that, and you go to a haunted house, you're probably going to have a run-in with your fears. But there's many times that we are not expecting to have an experience with one of our greatest fears. Like the other day, I got in my car and I'm driving, and all of a sudden the spider strayed from the ceiling. I'm like, well, why? Why? How'd you get in here? And trying to get it out of the car. But I wasn't expecting that. There's a lot of times that our fears can catch us off guard. But maybe you're sitting here and you're thinking, Lauren, you work with middle schoolers. We're adults. We're not scared. Nothing scares us anymore. And I just want to remind you, this is a safe space to admit that if you never saw a clown again, you wouldn't be mad about it. You wouldn't be sad. You see, as we get older, our fears actually grow and evolve with us, but our willingness to talk about them doesn't. Our fears grow and change and evolve, but our willingness to talk about it decreases. Think about when you were a kid. It was a lot easier to just tell someone, I'm scared. It was also harder to hide the fact that you were scared. It was easier to just admit, I am scared of the dark. I'm scared of monsters under my bed. I'm scared of a nightmare I had. For me, when I was a kid, for some reason, I was so scared there was someone hiding in my closet at all times. I would slowly open my closet and be like, today's the day. And there was never anyone hiding in the closet. But I just had this fear that someone was gonna jump out at me. So when I was a kid, I was scared of someone hiding in a closet, and today I'm scared of doing my taxes wrong and going to jail. Every year I hit submit on my taxes, and I think, this is it. Any day now, they'll be calling, and away to prison I go. Like, it's over for me. I'm in the market for a great CPA, if you know one, but I have this fear that pops up every spring. And even though it's the same emotion I had as a child, the fear component is still there, the actual fear has grown and evolved. And it feels silly to talk about. It feels silly to admit when we're scared. It feels silly to admit that I'm afraid, because we want to come across as strong and capable. We don't want to talk about it. It's also really personal to let someone in on your fears. And so I don't want to share what I'm scared of. That feels really vulnerable. But you see, what's true is that fear doesn't go away as we get older, but our vulnerability to talk about it does. Fear never escapes us. We can't outrun it. It will pop up. We'll run into it again. But we feel less of a desire to want to share it with people. We don't want to come across as weak. We don't want to come across as scared and a little scaredy cat. We don't want to let someone in on something personal to us that feels really vulnerable to tell someone, I'm scared and here's what's scaring me. And so we keep it to ourselves and we try to power through it. But unfortunately, life is full of moments, seasons, and situations that cause us to feel fear. There will be plenty of times where we run into fear again. Moments we didn't expect. Moments we didn't see coming. New fears we didn't even know we had until we're experiencing them. But I think something that elicits fear for a lot of us in here is the unknown. The fear of the unknown. When we don't know what's around the corner. When we don't know what's going to happen next. where we don't know where our job is going to take us next, where we don't know how much the bills are going to be next month, where we don't know how someone's illness is going to progress, if we don't know if we're going to find someone to settle down with, we don't know how the kids are going to be, we don't know if that friend's going to forgive us. In life, there are so many moments and so many seasons where it's filled with a lot of unknown, and that's scary. And if you're a follower of Jesus, there's a whole other level to that. Because these seasons of fear cause doubt and concern and a little anxiety. Because is God aware? Does God actually know this is happening? Is God going to help me out here? Is God going to give me some sort of sign or direction? I'm praying for these feelings to be taken away. I'm praying for help, but they're not going anywhere. Is God worth following? Is God worth following even through the unknown? Even when I'm not so sure what's around the corner? Even when I'm feeling scared? We're in this series called Worth Following, where we're walking through Psalm 23 and we're finding what makes God worth following. What makes God worth following even in those moments where we're starting to doubt if he is? Because let's just be honest, there's a lot of times in life where we doubt if he is. There's a lot of times in life where we wonder, does he know what's going on here? Is he aware of what I'm walking through? And even though I don't know the author of this psalm personally, David, I do believe that you can look back on his life and you can see there are so many moments in his life where he also felt fear, where he also experienced fear of the unknown. You see, David was randomly selected to be king. That's scary. The former king didn't like him, and so there was a ton of tension, and it caused David to be on the run from him and hide from this former king to save, protect his life. That's scary. Being king comes with its own set of challenges and fears, and although David was known and is known as a man after God's own heart, that doesn't mean he was exempt from fear, and that doesn't mean he always knew what was next. But before David was king, he was a shepherd. He was a really great shepherd. And he knew how to take really great care of his sheep. And one of the things David knew about sheep is that they have to constantly be moving. They can't stay in one place for too long. Because you see, if a sheep, if they get to a pasture and they decide to stay there for too long and they lay down, well, these well-worn spots can become infested with parasites that can get into their wool and ultimately harm the sheep. And so David knew he has to always be moving his flock. There has to be intentional movement happening to keep them healthy. But the other thing David knew about sheep that I think we all know about sheep is that they are easily scared. They are easily startled. They have a flight response to fear. Anyone can relate? They don't handle threats well. They want to run. And so David knew that if he was going to move his flock of sheep, he had to be prepared. There's no room for error here. He had to know the journey. He had to know the best route. He had to be prepared for when sheep might be tempted to run, but he couldn't guarantee they weren't going to run into any of their fears. And so David talks about this journey of moving sheep from one pasture to another, of moving sheep from one area to another. In Psalm 23, we're going to pick up in verse 3, where David says this. He says, he's talking about God here. He's talking about this good shepherd, but we live on the other side of Jesus, so we know that David was also expecting a Messiah, and so we can look at this and know he was also talking about Jesus as the good shepherd. But he, the good shepherd, guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. The right paths. You see, shepherds, they don't have the luxury of just going where the wind blows them. They don't have the luxury of just deciding where they'll go next, the day of. No, they have to be thinking because they have to know the right path. They have to be prepared for the sake of their sheep. They have hundreds of sheep following them. So they need to know exactly where they're going. They can't afford to make a big U-turn or to get lost. They have to know the right path. But what's true is that the sheep, they're just following. They're not on leashes. They're not being dragged. They're just following their shepherd. And so you hope that the sheep trust their shepherd enough to stay with them, But the reality is they could run at any minute. They could leave the flock, and there's plenty of reasons why they would run. They might get scared. They might get a little spooked. There could be a distraction. They could see some really delicious grass off in the distance. They could feel rejection from their flock, and they could run. And that's just the reality of herding sheep, is that some of them might run away. Some of them may not stay with the shepherd, although you hope they do. You hope they trust their shepherd enough to stick with him. And the same is true for us, that when it comes to following our good shepherd, we have the choice. We get to choose if we stay with him or if we run. We get to choose if we follow. And to follow the good shepherd is just basic obedience. And basic obedience is simply, I'm going to go where they go. I'm going to do as they say. I'm going to trust they have my best interest in mind. I'm going to believe that they are going to get me where I ultimately need to be. That's just basic obedience. And I've really experienced this tension of basic obedience in my life recently, because I have a 10-month-old puppy. Her name is Poppy. It gets confusing. This is her. She's had a haircut since then, so she's not operating with like 30% visibility anymore. She's 10 months old. She's very cute. She's very sweet. If you were here Super Bowl Sunday, she was in the little puppy bowl. She was the dog in red who froze. That was Poppy. But she's so cute. She's so fun. However, this basic obedience of following doesn't come easy to her. You know this if you've had a puppy, or I'm assuming a child before. It doesn't come naturally to her to want to follow me, especially when I first got her. And there are so many times still where I know she wants to go to the park and she's pulling me in the opposite direction. I'm like, if you just follow me, if you just stick with me, I'll get you where you want to go. And that has gotten better and it's grown, yes, because she's gotten older, but also because she's learned to trust me. She spent time with me. We can trust each other. Well, she can trust me. I can't always trust her. But she can trust me now. And although there's moments where she thinks we're going to the park and we go to the vet and it's okay, we're working through it, and there's still some disappointment there, she knows at the end of the day she can still trust me. But that took time. And that didn't come easy to her. And it doesn't come easy to us to follow somebody. Because it's easier for us to convince ourselves that we know more, that we know ourselves better. We know the best route. ChatGPT told me how to get there more efficiently. I know more than God does about this certain situation. I know exactly what I need to do and where I need to go. And it's easy to convince ourselves that we know ourselves better and know our situations better than God does. And we want to do what we want to do. And so it's hard for us to follow. It goes against our flesh to follow somebody. But Jesus talks about the importance of following. In Mark chapter 8, he was speaking to disciples and to a crowd, and he says this. He says, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. In order to follow me, you have to deny yourself. You have to say no to what you want to do and where you want to go. And you have to trust me. And that is how you follow me. But it's easy to follow when life feels easy, when life is going well, when things are going our way. It's easy to be like, yes, Lord, I'll follow you wherever you want to go. Things are looking up. I'm getting what I want. What I was hoping for is happening. Of course I'll follow. Why wouldn't I follow you? But you might know what comes next in this psalm. David says this in verse 4. He says, even though I walk through the darkest valley. Notice what he doesn't say. He doesn't say, even though I might walk, even though there's a chance I could walk through a valley, but I don't think that will happen. And if it does, I can find an alternate route. Even though I might walk, but I just think God thinks I'm really like fun and cute and he won't make me do that. No, David says, even though I I will walk through the darkest valleys. And I think all of us in here can think of the valleys we've already walked through. Maybe you're in one right now. And you're feeling that temptation to let fear take the reins. David said, we will walk through dark valleys, through dark seasons, through times in life where we wonder, is it worth it? Am I actually following a good shepherd? Because nothing about this path I'm on feels good. And if I had known this valley was coming, I think I could have changed some things in the past to avoid it. And if I had known this valley was coming, I could have prepared better. If I had known the route we were taking, I could have found a shortcut. I don't know if I believe this shepherd is good, because what good shepherd would lead me through a dark valley? I think when it comes to our walk with God, when it comes to our faith, we really enjoy the mountaintop moments. We enjoy the moments where life just feels great and we feel close to God and we feel a desire to keep growing in our relationship with Him. I have worked in student ministry for years. I grew up going to a youth group, and I have experiences, and I've seen this over and over, something that we call the camp high. And it's not what you think. We don't allow illegal substances at camp. The camp high is simply that feeling you have. You might have experienced this too. The feeling you have when you get back from a camp or a retreat or a mission trip, and it feels so great. And you feel this joy and this excitement to take back what you've learned and experienced, and you think, this is it. This is what my life is going to feel like forever. And it doesn't, because that's not life. Just like David and his sheep, they have to keep moving. And so we keep moving. We keep journeying through. And eventually we come down from the mountain a little bit. And we might even find ourselves approaching a valley. And when I find myself in these dark seasons, these seasons full of unknown, these seasons that are unpredictable, that feel chaotic, that cause worry and concern, the seasons that I don't want to be in, my plan of action is to run. I want to run through them as fast as possible. Ideally, I would like to run around them as fast as possible. I would like to find a shortcut through them if I could. I don't want to be here. I don't want to stay in this valley for long. And I can see this in my life over and over and over again. And anytime I feel fear, I have the temptation to run, to get out of there. I mean, one of the most scarring moments of my life was the time I had these so-called friends who convinced me to go to a haunted corn maze. I don't like haunted corn mazes. I knew that. And they were like, no, it'll be fun. Come on, come on. So I go. And as soon as we get there, I was like, oh gosh, I hate this. But we get to the corn maze. It's dark. It's haunted. We're walking in, and I've told my friends, like, I don't want to be here, but I came anyway. And so we're walking into the maze, and they have these scare actors around, and there are some with chainsaws, fake chainsaws. But my friends told them my name. I know. We're not friends anymore. So we are walking through the corn maze, and I'm already like, no, I don't want to be here. And I hear, Lauren, ring. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, is this real life? And I'm like, that's crazy. There must be multiple Laurens here. And I keep walking, and I hear it again. Lauren, where are you? Ring, whatever a chainsaw makes. And I, in that moment, was like, well, time for me to go. And so I just sprint. I just try to get out of the corn maze, not even through the maze part, just through the corn, and it looks like Wile E. Coyote through a brick wall. I'm running through it, and I can hear, I'm Lauren, and I'm like, please, 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 just take me out. And so I'm running through the corn maze. I finally get to this clearing. I come out of the corn. I thought I was out of the maze. I wasn't. I was just deeper into the maze. I come out, and all four of the guys with chainsaws, who turned out to be just like middle-aged men who needed a hobby, and they decided to volunteer their time by scaring children with chainsaws, find a new hobby, it's, who am I to judge? It looked like they were having fun. So I come out of the corn. I'm like stumbling out. They're all right there. They're like, oh, you're Lauren. And I just do what any normal adult does. And I sit down and cry. Thank you. Someone went, oh. I just cry because I'm like, this is the worst. And I'm bleeding because I have gotten scratched up from the corn. And eventually I get out of the maze. But my plan to get out, to try to remove myself as fast as I could, actually just caused more problems for me. I was separated from this group of people I came with who I don't know anymore, and I had blood all over my arm from the scratches, and I actually just got to my threat faster, all of them at one time. So this desire to just get out of any situation where I feel fear, where I am scared, actually just causes more problems for me. And I can see this over and over in my life. I want to fast forward through grief. I don't want to stay in grief too long. And all that did was cause me to delay actually processing the grief till years later. I feel this when I feel hurt. I don't want to stay in that hurt for too long. And so I just lash out without even thinking. I'm careless with my words. And I make more mistakes than I had already was feeling. I feel this in hopelessness where I don't want to stay in this feeling anymore. I just want to sit down and give up. I want to get out of this feeling, of this fear, of this valley. I don't want to stay there anymore. And there's a great book called A Shepherd Looks at Psalm 23. It's written by Philip Keller. And this is what he says about these valleys. He says this, there are going to be some valleys in life for all of us. The good shepherd himself assured us of that. In this world, you will have trouble, but take heart. I have overcome the world. The basic question is not whether we have many or few valleys. It is not whether those valleys are dark or merely dim with shadows. The question is, how do I react to them? How do I go through them? How do I cope with the calamities that come my way? So the valleys are inevitable. The valleys are going to happen. You know this. You've already walked through some. And the valleys are full of unknowns. And the valleys are going to cause us to wonder if this is worth it. But thankfully for us, the good news is a good shepherd would never leave his sheep in a valley. A good shepherd would never leave his sheep behind. A good shepherd leads his sheep through it. And so this is what David says in the rest of verse 4. He says, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. I will fear no evil, not because this valley isn't scary, not because that this is full of unknowns and I've never experienced these feelings before, not because I'm not sure of what's around the corner, but because I am being led by a good shepherd who knows the plan. He knows the path. He has my best interests in mind. I am being led by a good shepherd who's prepared, even when I feel like I'm not. And a great shepherd always has his rod and his staff at the ready. And the rod is simply just basically a stick. It's like a club-like tool that the shepherd carries, and it's a deterrent to any threats. And so anything that might harm the sheep, the shepherd would use the rod to remove it. But not only that, I just think this is so cool. The rod is also used to maintain and keep track of the health of the sheep. And so the shepherd will use the rod to separate the wool and comb through the sheep's wool so they can make sure it's free from parasites, of anything that could harm the sheep. And so this rod that is a massive consequence to any threats towards the sheep offers the sheep comfort and assurance that their shepherd is looking out for them. And then there's the staff. And the staff we've seen over and over, it's very recognizable. You see this at Christmas time and every nativity scene ever. But the staff is what identifies the shepherd as the shepherd. This is what identifies the shepherd to their sheep. And the staff, as you can see, it's tall with the hook, and it's made specifically for sheep and only for sheep. We all know it. We've all seen it. But it's made for the shepherd's flock. And a shepherd will use this staff to reach out, to catch, and to draw close the sheep who are feeling afraid, the sheep who don't want to move. They want to give up. The sheep who know that, yes, their shepherd's worth trusting, but they're just a little too fearful and they want to run. He will reach out, catch the sheep, draw them close so that they can be closer to him. This good shepherd offers comfort. And this good shepherd keeps his sheep close so that he can guide them through the valley. You see, comfort and guidance are what we need when we are walking through the unknown. Comfort and guidance are what I'm looking for when I'm running. Comfort and guidance are the things I'm missing out on that's causing me to feel this fear and this stress and this anxiousness that's causing me to just want to run through the valley as fast as possible. Comfort and guidance are what I need, even if I don't know it. And we follow a good shepherd who wants to give us those things, who wants to offer us comfort over our own. If I just try to get through the valley by myself, I'm going to feel misery. I'm going to feel confusion. I'm going to feel hopelessness. He wants to offer comfort. If I try to get through this valley by myself, I'm not going to know where I'm going. I'm going to get lost. I'm going to get turned around. I'm going to try to go through the woods and create more problems for myself. He knows the way. This good shepherd offers us comfort and guidance, even when we're scared, even when we don't know what's next, even when we're not sure if we want to follow, he still will offer us comfort and guidance through the valleys. But the valleys, like we said, are inevitable. They're going to happen. They're going to come our way. And because of that, I believe there are things we can do now that help us for when we face our next valley. Some ways I think we can prepare for the valley. The first one is, I believe we need to know who we're following. You need to know who you're following. You need to know this good shepherd. We need to spend time with him every single day. However it is that we best connect, whether it's through prayer or meditation or journaling or listening to worship music or outside in nature, whatever it is, we need to spend time with him so we know him and we know his character. So that when we get to a valley, we're not spending a ton of time doubting. We're not spending all of our time worrying, is this worth it? Is he good? No, we know he's good because we know him. And because we know him, we can trust him. But we have to intentionally make the time to know him. Not just when life is easy, not just when life is hard. Every single day we grow. And we deepen our trust in our good shepherd. The second thing we need to do to prepare is we need to find support. Who are the people in your life who you don't feel silly to admit that you're afraid to? Who are the people in your life who you can just say, hey, I'm scared, I don't know what's next, and they're not going to think less of you. They're actually just going to surround you. They're going to be right there with you. They're going to help you through it. We need to know who those people are now. And we need to strengthen those friendships now so that when we get to the valley, we're not feeling like we have no one around us. No, we know our people. And we know they're there for us. And we know that we can be honest with them and they're not going to see us as weak. And they're not going to see us as scared. And the third thing we need to do is we need to look back. One of the best things we can do for our faith is look back and reflect on how God has already been faithful, on how God has already proven that he's good. that he will offer us comfort, that he will offer us guidance. There's nothing that inspires my faith more than when I am facing a dark season, when I'm facing a scary situation, I can look back and I think, no, I know God is worth trusting because he's proven that already. I know God is worth following because I've done that already and he proved to be worth it. I know he's good. I know he's faithful. I know he will come through, and I know he's okay with my fear because he's already shown me that he is. And so the question that we have to ask ourselves every day, and the question I want to ask you as you leave is, are you following? Am I following? I have to ask myself that every day, even when life is great, because let's be honest, I'm more tempted when life is great to be like, I'll get to this faith thing later. I'm good, God, I got it from here. No, every single day, am I following? Am I making the conscious decision to follow him? Even when life is tough, even when it doesn't make sense, even when I don't know what's next. But I believe we can have confidence that we follow a good shepherd and that our heavenly Father will offer us comfort, will offer us guidance. And I believe this good shepherd is worth following. So we're going to continue this next week, but I would love to pray for us. Father, thank you so much for this day, God, for a place where we can come to worship you, to be in community that points us to you. Father, I'm just so grateful for this place. And God, I'm just so grateful that you are a good shepherd. You are worth following. You don't leave us. You don't leave us behind. You don't leave us to our own devices, Father. You want to be with us every step of the way. You want to help us navigate through this journey that you know that you're prepared for. And so, Father, when we bump into those moments where we're tempted to think, I know more than you, when we're tempted to want to run out of fear and let fear drive our decisions, God, will you just remind us that you're worth following? And God, will you help us step out in confidence and make the decision every single day to follow you? Because we love you. It's in your name we pray. Amen.